Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
And we're back with episode 390 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Dave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Adam!
Aiden?
I have Cherlindria's wand, Bav Morda, or some shit, I don't know. I just kind of picked that line at random.
It fell apart on you, didn't it?
I was like, well, I was like, well, I'm gonna, pigs, peck. What do I pick for a quote from this movie? I don't know. I don't care. It will.
Yeah, I figured it would have been the finger thing.
Right. Yeah, that's actually probably one of the best ones.
Yeah. So we're obviously here to discuss Willow, the 1988 movie. From the start here, because we're going to get into a little bit of it. I never watched the TV show.
I watched a couple of episodes.
Okay. I did read one of the novels, and I know you have.
Oh, interesting, because that apparently George Lucas is not a fan of those novels.
Oh, no, there's reasons. We'll discuss that.
I'm curious. Okay.
Yeah, directed by Ron Howard, written by Lucas and Bob Dolman, and of course starring Warwick Davis, Val Kilmer, Joan Whalley, Gene Marsh, Bill Barty, obviously.
You're probably my favorite. Bill Barty's role as High Alduin is, I will consult the bones, and is that great? Ignore the bird. Actually, I kind of love the ignore the bird line.
Yeah.
I should have just.
No, that's fair.
That. Yeah, ignore the bird, follow the river. Anyway.
So, yeah, this is one of those movies that, like, they had trouble making it because of a bunch of fantasy type movies, including ones we've covered, such as Legend.
Yeah. Yeah.
That did not do great.
Uh-huh.
And so they figured that this would not do great.
Yeah. No, after watching Legend and Lady Hawkeye, I thought, wow, I started Willow. I'm like, this is familiar. I recognize this.
Yeah.
We got ourselves a little bit of a mini series here.
Yeah. I mean, but the realistic thing is, And we watch this happen whenever we do the sort of like, oh, look, all these movies were kind of in the same zone.
Mm-hmm.
There's always one that's like, you know, the art version of it, which would be like Legend.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that's kind of this is the middle of the road, what the genre wanted to be, which is Lady Hawk in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a movie that's kind of written by George Lucas and directed by Ron Howard. And that shit basically is just like, oh, you put this movie down and it generates popcorn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't even really love this movie. I enjoy it. But anything directed by Howard and written by Lucas, like, it's going to be watchable. At the very least, it's going to be very watchable.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
Is it like buying a Ford Taurus? Is that what we're talking about? I don't know. It's like you can generally be sure when you're buying like a secondhand Ford Taurus, you can like, I know exactly what I'm going to get, and it will get me where I want to go. Or a Honda Civic.
Yeah, it's like that, you know.
But with the wand of Cherlindria.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, fairly just middle of the road. It's not going to try anything too fancy in any given direction.
No, but it's
kind of, not a ding, you know, like that's not what it's built for.
Yeah, it's playing the fantasy hits, I think is a good way to describe Willow, right. And it generates
popcorn. Highly competently.
Yes. I have to say, like when I was watching this, and maybe they've remastered it on Disney Plus, but this movie looks really good.
It always has, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw it in the 80s, and I don't remember, but seeing as what we've watched, like, you know, some others in this zone, this one is probably one of the most handsome.
They did do a huge remaster of it before the TV show, so.
Ah, okay. That this makes sense. Yeah. So it was good. I really enjoyed the look of it.
Yeah.
And I found the story instantly recognizable enough that I confess I did not watch it as closely as I watch some other movies.
I mean, because but that's what it's for, like, as terrible as it sounds, right?
Yeah.
This is that, like, you turn on, and I'm just going to East Coast this, you turn on WPIX at, like, you know, Saturday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and this is what you're watching.
Right.
Like, so, it feels like a movie that was built to have commercial breaks in it, in a weird way.
Well said. And, I mean, I've watched it on TV.
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, there's a great power and a great amount of skill that goes into doing that.
Yep. You're absolutely right. This is a very, like, well done movie.
Yeah. And, oh God, yes.
And like an Industrial Light and Magic with, like, you know, you could tell, like, Phil Tippett was doing some of these models.
Yeah, they were trying
effects.
For the yeah.
Just some of it is like when, like, for just for example, I mean, and I remember this, some of the effects are just kind of gross in a way you're not expecting.
Yeah.
Use the wand on the troll, and the troll just turns into, like, protoplasm that,
right,
like, and those two heads sprout from it. I'm like,
yeah, no, the early morphing.
Yeah. Oh, the morphing. And I'm like, if I were a little kid watching this, it would have been just pure nightmare fuel.
Yep. But I mean, that's what you want out of this sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think maybe if I'd been younger, I probably, this movie would have made a bigger impression on me at the time too. But I was like 16, 17 when
right.
it came out.
See, I 13? I mean, I was in the right age bracket for it.
Yeah, a little more in the pocket. Of
I was a little more in the pocket, and really the thing is, like, I loved, and this is why we're talking about it, of course, I love Val Kilmer in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
so impressed by his role as Willow. I mean, who would have thought?
But, you know, again, like, the rest of the movie was just so paint-by-number in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you're that age, like, it just, I already knew enough of the genre that it didn't work as well as it could have.
Right, yes.
So, there's that.
Yeah, perhaps in some ways it was a movie that came a little too late.
Well, no, I think it's also just circumstances, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I grew up reading a whole lot of this sort of thing, so it was kind of more old hat. If this was one of your first exposures to it, then this would be the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have to take that into account.
I refuse to take that into account. You can't make me do it.
But yeah, I think Warwick Davis is great in this, don't get me wrong. But it's funny, I was talking to a friend of the show, DJ Kirkbride, the other day, and we were talking about Willow a little bit. And he was like, yeah, who knew? Like, you just, you know, like, recast Han Solo with Val Kilmer, and it works even better.
Oh my God, I could not believe that when I was watching it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he is, like, that's the first thought. I'm like, oh, he's just doing Han Solo.
Yeah.
And of course, it's George Lucas. He's just.
Right.
Will resurrect. And Warwick Davis
Indiana
is playing
Jones.
The Luke,
like,
Skywalker,
it's that whole thing.
So, yeah.
But, like, you see that, like, oh, like, Harrison Ford, don't get me wrong, Harrison Ford, all his Han Solo, his Indiana Jones, fantastic, right? No notes.
Right.
But also, you get that thing of, like, man, Val Kilmer could have done those roles.
Yeah.
And we would just be gushing about them because look how good he's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a thing you necessarily realize.
Just starting to think. So, okay, let me just map. Do a quick map. If Willow is Luke Skywalker, and sure. Mad Mardigan is Han Solo, and Sorsha is Leia, and what's her face, Bav Morda is Darth Vader, and so on.
Right.
So, and I guess the Finn Razel, maybe Ben Kenobi.
Yeah, High Alduin. Well, High Alduin, of course, is more Yoda Kenobi-ish.
Yeah, So I guess Laura Dannen would be, I'm going to say she's the Force.
Right.
But I'm just going to say she's the Death Star. Because it doesn't make any sense. But I like the idea of a little baby like being able to destroy a planet.
Right.
But I mean, she's the Grand MacGuffin of this.
Yeah,
of this
movie, it's the Force.
Yes, and that's
It matches pretty well.
Yeah.
Which makes the next thing, well, the later thing, even funnier in the wrong way.
Oh no.
And again, we should talk about this movie a little bit more before we get into what happens next.
Yes, absolutely. By the way, the devil dogs, which, you know, were just Rottweilers with like costumes and little tails on. They actually did the exact same thing in Andor. Like they just put costumes on dogs and they look like the devil dogs. It is so fun. Because when I was watching, I'm like, hey, Industrial Light and Magic is still at it 40 yep. years later. Putting pretty costumes much. On dogs. It was great. But that's one thing I love about Willow is the way they took some really cutting edge special effects and just blended that with just really, really basic stuff. It reminded me of Jurassic Park in that same way, where they would just judiciously use like the newest and like really basic stuff to blend it together.
That's like the joy of like this era of Phil Tippett stuff, right? Like he wanted to just use the old stuff, but also he wasn't afraid of the new stuff.
Yes.
And he would find ways to kind of go, like Jurassic Park, right? Let's find the best of both worlds and make shit that no one will ever visually be able to top.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't go, like, I don't care how good CGI gets, it'll never look as cool as the rest of Jurassic Park.
it's true.
And like a lot of Willow is that they like dogs in costumes you can laugh at.
Yep.
But again, they have physical weight. They don't move like puppets because they're dogs. And it's just the genius of what a situation needs, what a moment needed. Yeah.
Right. It's funny. I was listening to a podcast talking, they're talking about Phil Tippett. sorry for the coughing. And one of the things that once somebody commented was that Phil Tippett, when they were making Empire Strikes Back and he was animating the Tauntauns, it's like when people realize that Phil Tippett understands how a Tauntaun moves. Tauntauns don't exist, but Phil Tippett understands how they move anyway. And so when you're watching a movie and you can see, you can almost tell when Tippett's involved in this era, because you're like, that thing is fake. It never existed.
But it does.
But it does, yeah.
Yeah, it firmly exists now.
Exactly.
And it will never not have existed again, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you're exactly right with like, Tauntaun. I hadn't even thought about it like that. That like, no, there's no like how a Tauntaun moves, but you see it and you're like, yeah, that's how a Tauntaun moves.
Yep.
And you can see the motion in your head. And you see anything else, you're just like, oh, they're basing that on Tauntaun movement. And you're like, wait a minute, no. Because that's not a thing.
Exactly. Well, I think, and they said that in Jurassic Park when he was animating some stuff with the dinosaurs. It's like, nobody really knows how these dinosaurs move, but Phil Tippett understands how these dinosaurs move. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I think it's that intrinsic, like, the clay modeling and all that work of, because he always did, like, start with the skeleton, that he just understands tendons, muscles, skeletons, like, the interplay in a way that very few humans do.
Mm-hmm.
And also that, you know, I mean, I'm sure there are more people who do, but also he happens to be able to marry it to the skill to show you.
Yes. Which brings me to a question. I'm in the middle of watching the series Light and Magic, a documentary series on Industrial Light and Magic on Disney Plus. I don't know if they talk about Willow. I'm sure they do. I've only watched like halfway through. But wow, it is amazing.
I watched some other documentary they did on ILM a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere, I don't know. And it was fantastic. So then all of Tippett and Jurassic Park. But no Willow. So listen, the Mad Mardigan thing. Because again, we're mostly here honestly for Val Kilmer.
Exactly. And frankly, this movie is kind of dull until Kilmer shows up. I mean, it's beautiful to look at. It's a little paint by numbers. But then
like Star Wars.
Yeah. Then you get Val Kilmer in a cage. Just being Val Kilmer, and I've never realized it.
Like I said, until DJ said it, and I know that Lucas is involved writing it, but just the amount of Harrison Ford in this particular performance.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's always that strain of Kilmer, right?
Kilmer
was always a good enough actor that he would do other things, and there is that very specific kind of Harrison Ford strain to it.
Right. Yeah. I think what Kilmer brings is that sort of manic dancing sort of aspect, like when he let out of the cage and he's like picking up the guy and going, "I feel better." And then like,
which was ad-libbed, by the way.
I understand.
I love that. That's just like, that's such a weird moment to ad-lib, but also it totally works.
Exactly. And that this kind of makes sense. I also love his like, what I can only describe as a shit-eating grin when he's trying to like ingratiate himself to Willow and the rest of them. And it's like you can tell how much fun he is playing a Han Solo character, it's great stuff.
But yeah, just like that kind of like that smirk, you know, that comes across in the voice. You don't have to see it; you know it's there.
Exactly. Yeah, it was great fun. I can't remember. There are other similar actors who were offered the role or were considered for the role.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad Kilmer took this, because man, you need Kilmer for this movie. It's the people that really bring the spark, right?
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, who was it? John Cusack.
Right.
And I like John Cusack a lot. Wow, I am really glad he did not get this.
I don't want to rescue any babies that are special or fulfilling a prophecy.
Now,
I don't want to fulfill any prophecies.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. Also, I just physically just, I'm sorry. I believe Val Kilmer as the greatest swordsman, you know.
You're right. Yeah.
I don't know that I could believe John Cusack. Maybe. Believe John Cusack is a secret assassin. Totally.
Sure. Yep.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yep. Yeah, I did like that line, because on the one hand, when he says, you know, I'm the greatest swordsman alive, on the one hand, it's pure bullshit, but on the other hand, it's also obviously true.
If you're
gonna see it happen. Yeah.
It's a little promise to the audience. There'll be sword fights, they'll be fun.
There were great sword fights and fun. There were castles, there were bridges,
catapults.
There were monsters, catapults. So many catapults. I actually, to be honest, there is so much in the back half. There was actually so many action scenes.
That whole extended castle action scene, bridge, catapult thing was just.
It got a little exhausting.
It really did.
I honestly stopped paying attention, because I'm like, okay, just wake me up when the characters like start doing things again, besides running around and fighting. I just think I know that they enjoyed the action, but I was like, guys.
Yes.
Also, what I find funny is that there were, what is it? Three, like the monster, apparently the two-headed monster was named Ebor Sisk. It's not said in the movie, named after, you know, Siskel and Ebert. And one of the characters, another villain, is named Kale, after Pauline Kael. Right. I'm like, this is a movie that is made by people who are deeply aware of the critical apparatus of the movie industry and are almost like daring critics to say boo about it.
Yeah.
Because it is so archetypal, like the plot, the characters, right. Everything.
They knew, yeah.
And they're not giving us anything new, but they're packaging it up in a particular way. And they're like, just in a way, it's a supremely weirdly postmodern work. Well, like all of Lucas's stuff, because he's he's remixing and repackaging old stories and you know, older ideas of stories, and which is weird because his movies often end up being kind of like the thing that they're pretending to be, which is anyway.
Also, you know, we end up with the brownies, which
I mean, those fun in small doses.
CPO and
yes, R2-D2
except that I kind of regret that they can talk in this one.
They're good for a bit. Like every so often, I'm like, oh, I like those. I like those two little brownies. And then I'm like, oh, you know, maybe they should have given them a little less to do. No, not that much. Even less. Thank you all. That's good.
So, you know, Willow, again, I don't know if there's really that much to say about Willow. But after Willow.
Yes.
There was what eventually became a trilogy of novels.
I am really curious about this because I just found out about them literally today. So
yeah, that were, you know, technically written by Lucas and Chris Claremont.
Yes.
And as I understand it, they were kind of loosely plotted by Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
And then Claremont wrote them. I don't know.
But, right, and they were called Splinter in the Willow's Eye?
That was one of them. The first one was Shadow Moon. No, you're thinking something else. Shadow Moon, Shadow Dawn, and Shadow Star.
Ah, okay.
The Chronicles of the Shadow War Trilogy.
Huh. And then there was the Willow Holiday Special.
Right.
Lucas, yes. Sorry, I'm being dumb. Please continue.
Okay. So, basically, Willow, like, it's like a year after, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Willow has this dream, and because of it, he sets off and goes and, like, leaves to go see what happened and takes on the name Thorn.
Oh.
Because of this dream. But here's the thing. In the dream, what he sees happen, essentially, really quickly,
mm-hmm.
in the pretty much opening of the book, is Mad Mardigan and Sorcha get killed, among other things.
Oh.
So it just kills them off in, like, the opening of the fucking book.
But it's a dream. It doesn't really happen.
No. This is what happens, which is, like, and that's the thing. It's like, it's so weird to me.
That is an odd choice for, like, if I were writing follow-up novels, I would not kill Mad Mardigan or Sorcha. Like, that's pretty basic.
And of course it has the other funny bit was this was, you know, back when Claremont was still writing X-Men, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to say anything bad about Claremont or anything like it, but I will say that he had two brownies in it that basically kind of read like Wolverine and Nightcrawler. Painfully so, honestly.
Oh, okay.
And it was just, it was weird. It was full of, like, Claremont dialogisms, and just, the prose was not great. And I never even looked for the other ones, mostly because you can't go, here's this book, and here's this really cool character, fuck him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that fact. Yep. It was just, it was legitimately weirdly insulting.
Eeks. Yeah, that's...
Just because it ended up feeling like he just had no love for it. It's like, I don't know. Imagine, like, you know, here's this. You know, we're not going to do any more TV shows and movies. Here's a continuation of Star Trek. The first thing we're going to do is kill off, like, you know, Spock or McCoy.
Yeah.
Why?
Or
like, even
or
if you
like,
just, like, want to do something where it's like they fall into a coma, you could take them off camera, but there's no reason to just kill them.
Right. I mean, what are you going to do next? Kill Foggy Nelson, like in the opening of Daredevil?
I know.
Come on. What a terrible idea that would be.
Yeah.
And it was.
But the nice part of this is that when they decide to do the show, because apparently, like, as far as I know, like, Lucas does not like the novels.
Yes.
He was like, he kind of had a hand in them. And his name is on them. when they were like, oh, we're going to do a show, They were just like, yeah, those novels never happened. Fuck you.
Now, you've never watched any of the series, right?
I haven't, and you can't actually watch it now.
No, which is...
Because we live in a hell called the future.
Yeah. So I was going to watch it, and then I found out that Disney would be removing it from the service and wouldn't be able to watch it, so I thought, well, I'd better get on that. And I watched an episode, and I was like, oh, okay, I like what they're doing. And then I watched another episode. I'm like, that's still okay. I didn't love it, but I'm like, I'm committed. And then I went back the next day to watch the third episode, and it was gone. So that was that.
Right.
I will say that I liked some of the grown-up characters. I think there's a grown-up Laura Dannon and the new world. But the weak link, and I hate to say it, was Warwick Davis, whose acting, whose performance skills, I don't think, like, they were really well suited to a fantasy movie in the 80s. And he was like a kid. He was 17, right? And he was like, he was really good. But in a television series where everything is kind of like the pace is slower and it's more psychological and character-driven.
Yeah, like 40 years later.
Yeah, it didn't really work. It just kind of felt like he was kind of reciting lines rather than being the character.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
which is a shame, but it's
yeah. So I mean, it's a shame, but also I kind of get it. Like,
it was what it was. And it wasn't removed from Disney because of Warwick Davis, and it wasn't removed because woke got them broke. It was removed so they would not have to deal with residuals or licensing because Disney are just greedy bastards.
Right.
Yes. Real shame. Real shame. But we do still have the movie. The movie looks great. And they're to disturb a whole new generation of children. I also really loved... One thing I really enjoyed about Willow is one of the things that stuck with me from when I watched it in the 80s was the climax of the movie.
Right.
Excuse me. Whereas Willow, tries to be a great sorcerer, but his triumph is to use just plain old sleight of hand,
right,
and trickery, which the evil wizard, which the evil witch queen cannot see as trickery because it's so far outside the realm of what she conceives of with magic.
Right.
And being a trickster is the thing that really wins. And it's like that was a great bit of character work from that movie. I love that. And I thought that was really good. And it was a really good sort of like way to like cap off all the action, which was just like punchy, stabby, shooty at that point.
Right. No, I again, like, it's constructed really well. It's really smart,
mm-hmm.
for what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
I just, yeah. Again, I'm fine with it. It just,
exactly.
Is what it is, and that's all it should be.
Yep. And this was also where Val Kilmer and Joanne Whalley met.
Yeah.
And were briefly married. And I didn't even think about it, but when I saw Val Kilmer and then Joanne Whalley, I'm like, oh, she's not even Joanne Whalley Kilmer. Oh.
Oh. Yeah.
apparently Davis claims that like Kilmer was actually a lot of fun on the set because he had yet to gain his reputation for being difficult on set. And I have a feeling, and Davis strikes me as a kind of person who's not going to speak ill of anybody anyway.
Sure.
He just seems like a very decent guy. So, unless he was like, tortured cruelly by Kilmer, he's not going to say, well, he was kind of a jerk, so.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, it's, I think you know, in the okay, so we have covered 3 Val Kilmer movies so far.
Yes,
we're not gonna go through everything. But should we decide on a ranking of the ones we have so far? That we can then forget and redo from scratch every time.
I love this idea.
Okay. So yeah, Top Secret, Real Genius, Willow. I feel like this is an obvious ranking. Maybe it's just being mean.
I'll give you mine. At number 3 in the bottom rank, I'm gonna put Top Secret. I like the jokes, but kind of an annoying movie, and the ending is bad. It's like they just ran out of money, like literally.
Yes.
Number 2, I'm gonna put Willow because it's a competent and nice looking movie. And Val Kilmer gives a good performance. And number 1, I don't know, this may come as a shock, but I'm gonna put Real Genius as our number 1 so far.
I had a feeling we would agree there.
I don't even have a hot take.
No, me either. I think it's that Willow is just so aggressively perfectly fine and watchable.
Yes.
And that's, again, exactly what it should be, exactly what it's meant to be. Mm-hmm. And it's never going to be, I don't know, there are people who absolutely love it who would probably sit there here and gush about all sorts of things that we're just okay.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. People will say, oh, do you remember when they did this? And we're like, yeah, sure, they sure did that.
Right.
And I felt kind of bad because I kind of wanted to feel more enthusiastic or less enthusiastic about this movie. Like, I'm like, it's not good enough for me to go, wow, this is good, but it's not at all bad.
Right.
I can't even go.
It's almost damning, right? That it's just kind of middle of the road.
Exactly. It's there, but it's actually better than just being it's there. It's because you admire the craft.
Yeah.
But I also found, I got to admit, I found a lot of the, on the negative side, a lot of the like the names of things, the wand of blah, 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 and the Isle of this. I'm like, I hate this. Please stop. Please, please stop.
Right.
That stuff I got tired of, but I'm like, but it's high fantasy. This is what we get, clearly based on like very, you know, Welsh stuff. Just nice little mythological resonances tucked in here and there, you know, a little something for the folks that we're watching closely, which is nice.
But yeah, I think, you know, we might just, you know, have a short little episode for Willow, which, okay, that sounds mean now, and I don't mean it that way at all. But yeah, we're going to take a little break from the Val Kilmer.
Yep. Because we do have to acknowledge, I mean, Val Kilmer is not the only person in this world who has died. So
I think it's more than that we have a movie that thematically is much like Willow, the story of a young man who has gone off to prove that he has magic while all those around him doubt.
Right, right. And like Willow, he simulates sex with a speaker.
Right.
You make a good point. And like Willow, he manipulates a woman into jumping into like filthy freezing water and then drives off on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be back next time with Purple Rain.
Yes, indeed.
But until then, we'll cue some music. Woo, music.
Willow, you idiot.